And we are, speaking of scriptures, in 1 Timothy chapter 4. 1 Timothy chapter 4.
Are you not recording this?
Yes.
Or you are?
I am.
Because Ann and Norris said they really appreciate
it. Wait a minute, would you repeat that? And Bob said, Ann and Norris, Bob said that you really appreciate this. And anyone else listening, yes, I'm sure, the same. Okay, where was I? 1 Timothy chapter 4, and we'll be in verses 12 through 16. Let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word and conduct and love and spirit and faith and purity. Till I come, give attention to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine. Do not neglect the gift that is in you, which was given to you by prophecy with the laying on of the hands of the eldership. Meditate on these things, give yourself entirely to them, that your progress may be evident to all. Take heed to yourself and to the doctrine. Continue in them, for in doing this you will save both yourself and those who hear you. If you'll permit me, I'm going to have a little story for you here at the beginning of this lesson, a little parable for you. It's the story of a man named Gregory Oswald Dandridge. Very highfalutin name there. And Gregory Oswald Dandridge was a very rich man, a very powerful man. He was a man who was also a very wise man and a strong man. And he loved his family dearly. He loved his wife. He loved his sons. He had twins, Freddie and Eddie. Yes, he named them that. You know how people do sometimes. And he loved them just as much as he possibly could. His wife died when they were very young, and he continued to be a strong and good father to them. Although he did have his rules, you know, as all fathers do. But he always used to go out with his sons and do things with them, and he always tried to be a good father to them, although he was rather strict. And one day they were out at a mall, and they were shopping, and they asked him, they were about 13 years old at the time, and they asked their father if they could go off and they could do some shopping on their own. And he thought, well, what can happen in a mall? So he let them go off. He told them, we're going to meet back here when you get finished at this particular time. So he was there when the time came, but his sons didn't show up. So he waited for them for a few minutes, and they still didn't show up. And he went out and started looking for them. He would go down a little ways, one aisle and down another aisle, and then finally he would come back and where they were supposed to meet, and they never showed up for 30, 45 minutes. And finally he got mall security involved in the search. And they looked through every store trying to find the sons. They couldn't find them. And eventually he called the police, and the police got involved in the search, and everybody was involved in the search. No one could find Freddie and Eddie. They had vanished from their father. He was very upset, as you might imagine. He hired private detectives to try to find his sons, but as the hours and the days and the weeks and the months went on, it was evident that they were gone. But what Gregory Oswald Dandridge did not know was that his sons had run away. They had decided they'd had enough of their dad and all of his strict rules and things like that. They weren't particularly happy with it. You know, they didn't mind giving him a little respect now and then, but at their age, they were just teenagers. You remember what it was like when you were 13 years old? Remember what it's like when your kids turned 13 years old? Pretty rebellious. And they were like that. They expected that their father would treat them a little bit better, but, you know, they didn't. He didn't. So they decided that they weren't going to take it anymore, and they left. Now, it sounds odd, you know, 13 years old, two kids to leave like that, but of course, a few weeks ago when I was doing the songs sermon, you remember one of the song leaders actually left home at 11 years old and worked in a lumber company. That's a pretty tough job. They put him up at the top of the trees. But anyway, he ran away. Did y'all know that Neil Diamond, the singer, left home at 13 and started doing the singing gigs? Rod McEwen, the poet, left home at 11. So that happens a lot of times. Kids leave home for whatever reason, and they survive. And amazingly enough, Freddie and Eddie both survived when they left home. And as they started living their lives, they had their father's sense of work, so they started working. And they were very good workers, and they eventually became rich and powerful like their father had become. They were strong like their father had become, and they got a little guilty about it, and they would sporadically let their father know that they were okay. They would send him postcards. When they send him a postcard, they'd send it from another town so he couldn't trace back the postmark, and they wouldn't tell him where they were. But at least they kept in touch with him to let him know that they were still alive. But Mr. Dandridge never gave up hope that he would someday see his sons again. And as a matter of fact, what he did was every once in a while, he'd put a personal ad in the newspaper looking for Freddie and Eddie Dandridge. If you've seen these two boys, you know, let me know. Well, many years later, lo and behold, he got an answer to one of these personal ads. Somebody had actually found them. They knew where they were. One of them was in one town, another one was in another town not far away from there, and they were able to get him the addresses and all. So his two sons, Freddie and Eddie, had been paying attention to all of these personal ads that their father had put in the newspaper, and eventually they saw this one ad that they had never seen before, and it said, "Sons of Gregory Oswald Dandridge, we have located you. We will call soon for you to come home and help me prepare my will. Be prepared to come with the lawyers." Well, the sons spoke to each other at this point, and they both agreed that it would be good for them to prepare to see their father, because after all, he's getting ready with a will, you know, you want to make a good impression. So what they decided to do was they were going to each give their father a gift. And what they were going to do is, just to make sure that their father knew who they were going to get a picture that they have from when they were kids, and they were going to put it in a nice frame and give it, each one would give one to the father. So they wrapped them up and they put a note in there that said, "I am your son," so that he'd know that that was the case. Well, one day Freddie got to thinking about all of this, and he said to himself, "You know what? As a kid, I was kind of scared of the dark. But I've realized over the years that it was my father's courage that helped me overcome that fear. He always used to talk to me when I was a kid and tell me there was nothing to be frightened of. I didn't believe him then, but as I grew, I started to believe him." And so he said, "You know what would be really kind of neat is if I gave him some kind of symbol that I wasn't scared of the dark anymore." So he unwrapped the gift. You ever tried to unwrap a gift, you know? He tried to unwrap the gift, and then he got a nightlight, and he slipped it in there. And that was a symbol to his father that he had overcome his fear of darkness. Eddie was still afraid of the dark, so he wasn't about to give up his nightlight. He wasn't going to do anything like that. Well, it wasn't too much longer after that that Freddie began to think about all the lessons that his father had taught him over the years. As a matter of fact, Freddie, through the years, had kept a journal. And in the journal, he had talked about these lessons that he'd learned from his father and how they had affected him through his life. So he decided, well, you know what, this would be a good thing to give my dad so he'd know that I had followed his lessons. So he unwrapped the gift again, stuck that in the box, and wrapped the gift back as best he could. Eddie decided, "I'm not going to do anything like that, because everything I have, I've earned on my own. I've done it all myself. I'm not going to give any credit to my dad. Who in the world does he think he is taking all this credit? I am the one who did all the work. I worked hard for all of this." Well, a couple of weeks went by and nothing ever happened. The lawyer didn't come. So Freddie began to think about some more things. And he began to think that, you know, over the years, I've had some really bad habits. I've done a lot of things I shouldn't have done, and I've gotten into a lot of habits. And one of the worst ones was overeating. I just used to overeat all the time, but I overcame that. I learned how to overcome those habits. I learned self-control. And, you know, a lot of that came from my dad and how he taught me to have more control over my own life. I dieted, I lost weight. I'm going to put another symbol in this box. So he opened up the package again, and he put a Diet Coke in there, just so he could see, you know, I've been dieting. Eddie was busy eating dinner that particular night, so he didn't do anything like that. They kept waiting, and finally Freddie began to kind of think about the fact, well, it's been a couple of months since our dad said anything to us. But, you know, I haven't really gotten too antsy about it. I must have learned some patience through the years. And so he realized that he'd gotten that patience from his dad, because he realized all the things that his dad had done for him, and he overlooked a lot of stuff that the boys had done. So he decided he was going to do a symbol for that. He reopened the box. He put a clock in it to let his dad know that he knew about time, and he was okay with that. Meanwhile, Eddie was looking at his watch and looking at the calendar to see when the lawyer was going to come. Finally, or rather, Freddie realized that he also looked a lot like his dad. He started looking at a picture that appeared in the newspaper of his dad, and he said, "You know, I look an awful lot like him. As he grew older, I grew to look like him." So what he decided to do, he scanned the photograph, and he put it in a frame, and he got a picture of himself and put it in the frame so that he could say, "I look like you. Look at this. I look just like you." And so he opened up the box and put that in the box for his dad. Eddie was still angry with his dad for all the things he'd done in the past. He didn't care about any of that. Freddie realized that his dad put a lot of stock in the family and how much his father had spent time with them. He never gave up on them all through all of those years. And he realized that family is very important, so he called up Eddie. And he said, Eddie, I'm so sorry that I haven't been a good brother to you. I'm so sorry that I have not been the kind of person I could have been to you. I want you to forgive me for all of that. Eddie thought about it and said, right, and hung up the phone. Finally, Freddie realized that all he was because of his dad, Gregory Oswald Dandridge. He learned his business sense from his dad. He learned all the things that he had learned in his work life through his dad. He learned about a care and concern for his employees, just like his dad had. And all of that was embedded in his conscience because of his dad and the influence of his dad. And he understood, finally, how much his dad really loved him. And it led him in the same way in his life and his work life. And so what he did was he opened up the box and he took out his checkbook and he put the checkbook in the box and sealed the box back up. As a symbol of everything I have, I owe to you. I owe my life to you. Eddie told Freddie that he was crazy. And then a couple of days later, there was a knock at each of their doors. And a lawyer was standing there, said, time to go. You got to go to your dad's house. And so they both picked up their gifts and they went to their dad's house. Freddie walked in and he handed his gift to his dad. And this thing was about the worst looking package you've ever seen in your life. It was all torn, ragged, you know, taped over several times. The bow was all flat. Eddie's was pristine. It was the most beautiful package you've ever seen, like it had been professionally wrapped. As a matter of fact, it had been professionally wrapped. He went to a gift shop to get them to do it right so that it would look pretty for his father. And then his father, their father opened up the packages, and he looked in Freddie's, and he saw all the things that Freddie had put in there, and he read the notes, and he could see a tear going down his cheek. And then he opened up Eddie's, and he saw the one little picture in the frame, and the rest of it was totally empty, nothing else there. And he turned to Eddie and he said, my son, if you were really my son, you would have been a reflection of me. You would have realized all of these things that your brother realized, that Freddie realized. You would have learned all of these lessons, and you would have known that because of me, you were able to do all the things that you were doing. I know you were rebellious, but I was willing to take you back. It's no big deal. But you just, you know, you just don't have that spark in you. And so I think you're really an imposter. I don't think you are my son. Leave this house. And he had a lawyer escort him out. And then he turned to Freddie and he said, everything I have is yours. You can live in my mansion for the rest of your life. I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to figure out what this story is about, does it? I think you're all pretty much all ahead of me on the meaning of this story. It is about the life that we sometimes have and the way that we react to God. And it is a scene that is carried out every day all over this world. Every day there are dying Christians who have beautifully wrapped but empty packages that they present to God on that judgment day. They have the right idea, but they come up short on the execution. They see what God has given them, but they don't really take it into their lives. Matthew 5:6, Jesus said this, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled. Freddie looked at his package and he realized that it was beautiful, but it really said nothing at all to his father, and that one little picture wasn't going to say anything to him. He decided to fill that package with all the knowledge that he had, with all the wisdom that he had learned from his father. And he did not care at all that the package was rumpled and torn and had all kind of tape on it and bulged out at the sides. He just wanted to fill it up with those things that his father had given him. Eddie decided to go for the outward look, not to be concerned with what was on the inside, but to just be concerned with at least giving that gift to his father. Now, you know, if we looked at those two gifts ourselves, we would probably pick the more beautiful one, wouldn't we? We would think, that's a good-looking gift. I bet that's expensive. And this other guy didn't bother too much. As a matter of fact, I have tried that little experiment before, and they always took the good-looking gift. They didn't get a good thing. And you know what? We don't either. What was it that Saul said in 1 Samuel 16:7? The Lord does not see as man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. That is a well-known verse, but it is a very powerful verse that we should all remember. It's not what's on the outside. It's not the beauty of the package. It's what's on the inside that counts. Have you ever seen the Mercedes-Benz commercial where the blonde walks into this building and it's obviously a library? You know, people are around reading books, books on the shelves, and she walks up to the counter and she says, "Yes, I'll have a hamburger, fries, and a milkshake." And the librarian just kind of blinks and she says, "This is a library." And the blonde looks around. I'm sorry, I know. The blonde looks around and she looks at the librarian and she says, "I'll have a hamburger, a milkshake, and fries." The tagline is, "Beauty is nothing without brains." And how true. What God the Father was saying in Jeremiah chapter 31 and verse 33, "I will put my law in their minds and write it on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people." There were no more tablets of stone. Those Ten Commandments on the tablets of stone. It's all going to be on your hearts now. It's going to be where it's going to be taken into your lives. We looked in Ephesians this morning in the first chapter. Let's look again in the third chapter of Ephesians at what Paul said in verses 14 through 19, which is pretty much along these same lines. Paul said, "For he himself is our peace, who has made both one and has broken down the middle wall of separation, having abolished in his flesh the enmity, that is, the law of commandments." Oh, wait a minute, I'm reading the wrong one. See, I read the wrong verse there. I just wanted to show you it happens all the time, right? Okay, chapter 3, verse 14. "For this reason, I bow my knees to the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, from whom the whole family in heaven and earth is named, that he would grant you according to the riches of his glory to be strengthened with might through his Spirit in the inner man, that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, that you being rooted and grounded in love may be able to comprehend with all the saints what is the width and length and depth and height, to know that the love of Christ, which passes knowledge, that you may be filled with all the fullness of God." Christ and God, the Spirit, must dwell in our hearts, not just on our outward lives, but also in our hearts. We need to be rooted and grounded in the Word. We need to be rooted and grounded in the Lord. We need to be rooted and grounded in His love, not just for us, but of course, but for everyone on this earth. It is not enough for us to put on the outfit. We have to live the role. You ever gone to a play or a movie where the costumes were just wonderful? I mean, it was just brilliant, fantastic. The CGI was the best you've ever seen in your life. You look at this and you think, what a beautiful thing. And then the actors start talking and there's nothing there. There's no emotion. There's no feeling behind it. It's an empty performance. And that's what happens sometimes with Christians. We think we know everything, but it's just an empty performance. Peter drives home this point just a little bit more in the second chapter, in the second book of Peter. And when you look in the first chapter, starting in verse 5, he says, "But also for this very reason, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, to virtue knowledge, to knowledge self-control, to self-control perseverance, to perseverance godliness, to godliness brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness love." It is a progression. It's like Freddie, you know, he kept putting things in that package, putting things in that package. As a matter of fact, that's where I got the things that he put in that package for my little parable, was from this passage in 1 Peter. It's one of my favorite passages in the entire Bible. The things that we have, we need to put in our hearts. We need to put these things in our souls, and we need to put these things in our lives. And why do we need to do that? Well, Peter answers it in the next two verses, 8 and 9. "For if these things are yours and abound, you will be neither barren nor unfruitful in the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. For he who lacks these things is short-sighted, even to blindness, and has forgotten that he was cleansed from his old sins." The more we learn about God, the more we learn about his Son, the more we learn his Word, and the more we look into the world, the more we understand that we need to continually grow, to continually add to our resume, if you will. These are the things that we are going to present to our Father one day when we get to heaven. Freddie understood all of this. All he would ever be was because of his father, Gregory Oswald Dandridge. You notice the initials, by the way, G-O-D. I hope all of you got that at the beginning. Careful about that. Eddie, just as Peter says, was short-sighted. He was blind. He was arrogant. He was rebellious. He depended on himself and depended on his own devices to get through the life and to get him through the rest of his life, never understanding that all he was because of his father. The passage that I read at the beginning of this lesson from Paul was advice that he gave to Timothy. And that was to work with the gifts that he had been given, to grow those gifts, to expand his usefulness to the kingdom, to expand his usefulness to Jesus. And why? Well, in doing this, you shall save yourself. But then he adds, you'll also save those who hear you. There's a lot of work that goes on there. You've got to continue to grow. When I was a kid, my father gave me the best piece of advice I've ever been given by anyone at any time. He told me that when you go to work, you learn everything you can wherever you work. You learn everything you can. And it's not to make yourself indispensable. No one is indispensable. I hate to tell you all this. I hope you all know this. No one is indispensable. We are all replaceable. It may take five people to replace you, but you're still not indispensable. It's to make yourself, the reason he told me to do that is so I could make myself more useful to my employer. And somebody that my employer could depend on not only to do the job and do it correctly, but to be willing to do more, to be willing to go the extra mile, if you will. And I've tried to do that with everything I've been doing in my life. I started working at 16 years old. I have been a bag boy, a summer camp counselor, a file clerk, a cameraman at a printing plant, a disc jockey, a stripper. Yeah, I know. Y'all love it when I say that, don't you? It's a printing stripper is what it is. I have been an audio editor, a video editor. I have been a director and a producer, a technical writer, a public relations director, an advertising buyer, an instructional designer, a voiceover talent, a preacher, and a missionary. I can't keep a job. No, a lot of those were the same job. And I learned to do all those things in the same job because I had to. Because I needed to grow as an employee. Oh, and by the way, I've also been a husband and a father. Those are jobs too, you know. You have to work at those. You have to grow. You have to learn how to get along. You have to learn how to pamper your spouse, as we were talking about earlier. I cannot stop learning. I have to continue to learn, and I'll have to continue to learn until the day I die. I cannot stop opening and reopening that box to put new things in for God. When I was looking for a job last year, the potential employers that I went to looked at my resume, and they were shaking their heads. I can't believe this. Look at all this stuff you've done. You can't keep a job. They said, look at all this stuff you've done. Look at all this stuff you've learned. And they were impressed, and that they weren't impressed that I'd done all that stuff. They were impressed that I was willing to do all that stuff, that I was willing to work for them. They knew that even though there were some rough edges and I didn't have all of the skills they wanted, I could learn those skills. And that's the same with the Father. He knows we can learn those skills. We have to have the confidence to do that. We have to have the confidence to keep working on our gifts so we can learn how to open up new gifts from the Father. It makes me wonder sometimes what kind of a package I'm preparing for my Father, for my judgment day. What will I present to Him when I'm no longer here? Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Back in the Depression, you know, earlier than that, a lot of kids would get up on Christmas morning and they were so excited. And it wasn't because they were going to get the latest toy. It wasn't because they were going to get the latest electronic device or some hotshot clothing or something like that. It was because they got fruit. Fruit. They were thrilled to get fruit because they didn't see fruit that much. And so it was fantastic to wake up on Christmas morning and see that fruit. What a gift. Well, that's what God wants from us. He wants fruit, the fruit of the Spirit. And He wants it so much that He's even willing to exchange gifts with us. He will offer us grace and heaven if we'll just give Him our fruit. What a deal. What a deal. What's in my package? I keep trying to do it as much as I to fill it up as much as I possibly can. And sometimes I don't do as good a job as I should. But I keep working at it. What's in your package? How many times have you opened it and reopened it and put more stuff in there? Knowing this congregation, you've probably got the rattiest looking packages anybody's ever going to present to God. But that's great. He'll love it. Let's all work to begin or to keep filling our packages to overflowing, to give God those fruits of the Spirit. And not only that, but to help others look at their packages and understand what they need to be filled with. If you have a need to answer an invitation this morning, we're going to offer that to you right now while we stand and sing.